Good evening, Northwestern. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Francesco, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, a protest of the Trump administration, a robot hand development at Northwestern, a little story on Netwestern, a new popular mobile card game, and all you need to know about Northwestern sports. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. On April 5th, thousands of people gathered in downtown Chicago to protest the second Trump administration. John Kowalski has the scoop.
Currently walking down the street towards Dearborn Street, where there is a large protest occurring in front of the Richard J. Daley Center.
On April 5th, thousands of people came to the Loop from all across Chicagoland and the country. They gathered in Daley Plaza, holding signs, chanting, screaming, and marching, all in protest of the second Trump administration. I went into the Loop that day and talked to some protesters about what brought them downtown. Liz Rathburn, a student at UIC, spoke to me just outside of Daley Plaza at noon.
I think it's really important that, you know, we put out a united front against, you know, these racist, reactionary right-wing attacks that are coming down on every kind of person in this country, you know, from federal workers to immigrants to women, you know, to protesters facing charges now, you know.
Across the U.S., protests erupted as part of a coordinated effort called Hands Off. Protesters supported a variety of causes, from abortion access to maintaining Canadian sovereignty. These protests weren't small either. Democracy Now! Estimates that about 1 million people protested across the United States and around the world against the Trump administration. Sol Vega, a union rep and employee from the south side of Chicago, talked to me about why she felt compelled to go to the protest.
All of these people here represent all of the people that I represent in my industry. So being here in solidarity with them, letting them know that we're here to support each other.
Vega then demonstrated to me one of the chants that had been heard around the plaza.
The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated.
Many protesters, like Amy Healy, focused on the impact that they felt the administration was having on education.
I'm a librarian. The Institute for Museum and Library Services staff, all of them, were just fired, which means no money for grants or education or programs or student internships or any other programs in any library or museum in the country. It's a direct attack on education, just as the attack on the universities is a direct attack on the First Amendment, and it's got to stop.
I spoke with a lot of protesters while standing in Daley Plaza. Here are just a few snippets of some of their thoughts.
I need to fight capitalism, not just Trump, not just Joe Biden, but all of them, the bourgeois as a whole.
What brings you to the protest today? How about violation of all my civil rights? The trampling of our Constitution, the destruction of our nation, of our government.
I say is that we shouldn't have a bunch of technocrats running government who weren't directly elected by the people that have absolutely no right to be in the position that they are, that are breaking executive authority in pretty much every single capacity.
Ever since Trump took over, I mean, it's just been destroying democracy.
At one point, the protesters started marching. They made their way through the Loop, all the while screaming and chanting.
This is what democracy looks like. Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like.
April 5th was not the first time Chicago had seen protesters. I spoke with Kevin Boyle, a history professor at Northwestern, and asked him about the history of protesting within the city.
Chicago has a very, very long tradition of protests of all sorts. This was a major center in the 19th and early 20th century of labor activism. So there were many, many labor protests. It was a major, major site of civil rights protests, particularly at the peak of the civil rights movement in the 1960s. One of the largest civil rights demonstrations of the entire 1960s was in Chicago, larger than the March on Washington.
Chicago is certainly no stranger to protests. But with such a storied history of activism, it does make one wonder, are these protests effective?
I think protests can have all sorts of degrees of effectiveness. Again, one way in which a protest has an effectiveness is if it had an immediate goal and it's achieved. That's the easiest way to say, yeah, that was an effective protest. But that's not really probably even typical of protests. It can have a goal as simple as giving people a sense that they are heard, that they have made their voices heard in public. And I think you could look maybe at the most recent protest, the hands-off protest, in that light.
While protesters continued to walk up State Street, I made my way into Macy's, where I found Meg Givan, a Logan Square resident, resting at a table. I asked Givan a simple question.
What do you believe the protest statements?
I got this response.
The marching in and of itself obviously doesn't do anything directly except show what people, how disgusted so many people are. The problem is that this administration doesn't care. This administration seems to want the population to be stupid, ill, and impoverished, and women to be pregnant and silent.
After talking to a few more people, I made my way out of the loop and returned back to Evanston. When I went back to State Street that night, the protests were over. Another nationwide protest is planned for April 19th. This time, the group 5051 is organizing and calling for protests across every state in the U.S. The group ultimately hopes for 11 million people, or 3.5% of the population, to join in.
You know, it's always, always going to be really a very small minority of Americans who would go out and actively protest. But I think it's one of the most noble parts of the American tradition, that you feel that you can make a claim about how you believe the nation should be, the city should be, your job should be. You're making a claim to your vision for the future. And I think that's a really noble thing to do.
For WNUR News, I'm John Kowalski.
All right. Robot arms will soon be doing tasks like folding your laundry. The Northwestern Robotics Research Center received a $26 million grant from the National Science Foundation last August. Mariah Petway checks in on how the robots are moving and handling objects.
Metal parts cover the white desk in Wing B of the Technological Institute as machines hum in the background. Director Ed Colgate says that the center has the power to make robots that help with tasks like manufacturing.
So imagine that a robot came out of the box with a really versatile end effector, kind of like your hand, right? It could pick up and use tools, the same tools that your people use. And not just that, it had skills. It knew how to use those tools out of the box without you having to train it.
But creating that kind of machinery takes funding. The NSF grant supports hardware creation, AI software, and interfaces. Researcher Toby Buckley is part of a project where a robotic arm and hand mimic the manipulation of human motion. I even got to test it myself while Buckley walked me through it.
So you want to stand like roughly right here. Foot pedal is a dead man switch. So these, the middle button needs to be active the entire time that you want the system to be enabled.
Then I put my fingers into a glove that matched the design of the robot's hand. I picked up rings from a cone and moved a cube. It felt like I was doing it all with my real hand. Buckley is also working on a new project that uses AI to help robots learn new tasks while keeping a person in control. Mariah Petway, Madu.
Knit Western has been the university's knitting club for years, but recently they've made a change with how they use their giant needles and bundles of yarn, crocheting. Elena Scott has the story.
You want to half of that. So that's your tail, unless I'm missing it.
This is the tail?
Yeah, so that's the tail, and the other side is the working ear.
Oh, so I'm still working on the side with the
arm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect. So, yeah. So that's the right side, yeah.
Okay. Senior Dan Marietta is the president of Knit Western. Under the fluorescent Kresge lights, he gathers with other students around a bright blue IKEA bag filled to the brim with yarn. Although Marietta is hooked on teaching knitting, Knit Western now offers crochet lessons as well. Junior Ainsley Lauer is the communications chair. She teaches crocheting.
And you see all these people making like crochet flowers and these little crochet animals. So I think that draws people in. Knitting is a little like, it takes more time. It's like, you can make these super cool sweaters and stuff, but only if you're like a knitting master. And so crocheting is a little more approachable.
Marietta and Lauer agree that crochet has become more popular, and they hope this will draw a larger crowd to meetings. Junior Scott Wong is a new member of the club. He is learning how to crochet.
Something that I think would be really like enjoyable to just have to do in the future, like, you know, it's on the same level as a puzzle, just to sort of, you know, in your free time, and I think this is a good place to learn it.
Whether it's knit or crocheted, every single item made by a club member is donated. Despite this new focus on crocheting, the Knit Western name is safe for now.
Knit Western's so catchy, though.
Well, both the club's knitters and crocheters agree on one thing, the joy this club brings them. Elena Scott, Medill Reports.
In the past year, a new mobile card game has risen to the top of the gaming world. Sophia Pasqua has the story.
In the span of a few months in 2024, a new indie video game took the world by storm. It's called Balatro, and lately everyone seems to be playing it. It became so widespread that even I started to take notice, and I'm the furthest thing from a gamer. So I started to wonder, what is this game? Where did it come from, and how did it get so popular? To answer these questions, I called my go-to gaming expert, my older brother, Alan.
I love Balatro. I've gotten so many people hooked on Balatro. I play it probably at least 5 times a day. The whole premise of it is similar to, like, it's kind of like a poker offshoot game, and it is a roguelike.
I also talked with McCormick Senior Colin Schilf, a game head for Northwestern's esports club.
The kind of gambling aspect engages you a lot. There's a lot of luck involved, but there's also this category of games called roguelikes, which are like just every run is very different, and there's a lot of different factors that can come together and get you to like a super high score, and I think that's way more interesting for people.
I love roguelike games, and I started seeing on Twitter a little while ago, like probably about a year ago at this point, screenshots and videos of people playing Balatro, and I was like, oh, this looks fun.
It just kind of went viral through most like gaming channels. There's a platform called Steam where most people buy their games, and it was like the most selling indie game and like the most selling game for like multiple weeks in a row when it came out. So I started playing like a month after it came out, which was March 2024. It wasn't on phones yet, but after like 2 more months, it was on phones, then it was everywhere.
Yeah, it came out and I was hooked completely. If you want to go down the Balatro wormhole, apart from the gameplay mechanics, the developing story is really interesting. So look up Local Funk. He created this game solely by himself, like pretty much with no help. He's also remained completely anonymous, which is cool and hard to do in this day and age.
Taking my brother's advice, I looked into Balatro's game developer, Local Funk, and found that he has amazingly stayed anonymous. He's gone so far as to send other people to accept major rewards on his behalf, including an actor dressed up in full costume as Jimbo, the Balatro Joker.
Yes, it's me, that weird live-action Jimbo from the Balatro commercial.
But even though Local Funk is private about his identity, he has publicly shared a lot of information about Balatro's development process on his blog, which you can find at localfunk.com. To learn more about what makes Balatro's journey so special, I talked to Professor Derek Fields, who teaches courses in game design and 3D modeling at Northwestern.
So it just so happens that I bring up Balatro every now and then, and most recently through a course on video game entrepreneurship. What I latched onto was their whole point for making Balatro was that they were just doing it for their friends. And so what's special for me and kind of at the core of why I think it's important to teach games and teach people building out their own ideas is it's just an authentic experience, and it just so happened to have blown up. It wasn't strategically developed to be popular online, but that's the outcome that, you know, we're all kind of reconciling.
I also asked Professor Fields what they think about the actual design of the game and why it's so fun to play.
If for me, it's sound and like haptics. And so I think a game can really get me latched on when I do an action and that action feels good. Playing Balatro, like every little motion has a sound to it that just objectively feels really great to hear. It's almost like, I don't know, a little bit of card ASMR while you're playing this game. Fundamentally, what's really fun about Balatro is it's very low barrier to entry in terms of the accessibility and getting people encouraged to playing it and trying it out. I think a lot of us fundamentally have, you know, a surface level understanding of poker and can therefore be like, okay, I think I can do this. But the other special element is, you know, kind of being able to put your flavor on that game. There's a bunch of different packs and themes and collaborations with external IPs now that have made the game all the more special. And so, yeah, I think all of it comes together in a really pleasant way.
Even now, over a year after its launch, Balatro remains one of the most popular games on the App Store and Google Play.
It's cool that it's so simple and it's like so addictive to like such a wide audience. I think that's really special about Balatro.
And I know you're wondering if after all this research, I ended up downloading and playing Balatro. And the answer is, of course, yes. For WNUR News, I'm Sophie Pasqua.
It's been a packed week for Northwestern sports with action on the field, the court, and the diamond. Ansley Simpson has a full report on how the Cats did this past week.
Hi, I'm Ansley Simpson. Here's your NU Sports Report for this week. Northwestern baseball kicked off the weekend series on a high note, securing a Friday night victory over Michigan State. The Wildcats jumped out to an early lead in the top of the first inning thanks to an RBI single from center fielder Jackson Freeman that played the game's first runs. Despite the strong start, Northwestern couldn't maintain the momentum. The Cats fell to the Spartans in both Saturday and Sunday matchups, dropping the series 1-2. On Tuesday, the Cats faced the Northern Illinois Huskies, but unfortunately did not come out with a win. They start their three-game series against Nebraska on Friday. Sunday, the Northwestern lacrosse team faced the Oregon Ducks in Evanston. The third-ranked Cats were able to secure a win 19-10. The Wildcats scored 17 goals before halftime, their most in a half this season, behind an explosive performance from Madison Taylor, who racked up 11 points on 7 goals and 4 assists. The Cats raced to a 5-0 lead and stayed in control throughout. The Wildcats will host Michigan on Thursday for their final regular season home game. Finally, in tennis, the men's team closed out its home slate with a split weekend, beating Penn State 4-1 on Friday before falling to number 4 Ohio State on Sunday. After dropping the doubles points, the Wildcats stormed back in singles. On senior day, NU couldn't keep up with the Buckeyes, who swept the match 4-0. The Wildcats wrap up the regular season next weekend on the road at Washington and Oregon. Northwestern's women's tennis fell 4-1 to Illinois on Saturday in their home final. Senior Sydney Pratt earned the Wildcats' lone point with a comeback win at number 4 singles. NU now heads on the road to close out the regular season at Purdue and Indiana next weekend. That wraps up your NU Sports Report for this week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Ansley Simpson, WNUR News.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Fake spring makes a return as temperatures drop. Although it was nicer earlier in the week, today's weather is going to continue to hang around the 40s, and the rest of the week is looking quite gloomy, with lots of rain expected from tomorrow through to the weekend. Looks like Friday is going to have a high of 69, though, so maybe it won't be too bad after all. Taking a look into the headlines of Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation, In Northwestern news, the U.S. Department of Energy could terminate all of the university's research programs unless NU drops their indirect research cost from 60% to 15%. University has about a month and a half to do this, as they have until May 14th to accept the proposal. In Evanston news, Mayor Daniel Biss will appoint Kat Vielma to the Land Use Commission rather than reappointing George Halleck. Some Evanston residents are upset due to his reputation as a true representative for the people of Evanston, and a petition to reappoint Halleck in Evanston has over 500 signatures. In national news, there has been an island-wide blackout in Puerto Rico. According to CNN, the blackout could last for days, and tens of thousands were left without access to water. According to Governor Jennifer Gonzalez, officials are working diligently to fix the issue. And that's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram WNUR News 89.3. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. One more time, that is WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Ethan Pan, and our reporters are John Kowalski, Mariah Petway, Elena Scott, Ansley Simpson, and Sophie Pasqua. I'm Francesco Thorik Saboya. Catch our next newscast on Friday, April 18th. Now, back to scheduled programming.